Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about doing the hard work to implement freedom, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ, and we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. As Exodus 15:3 says, the Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. Are we warriors? Are we willing to do what it takes to get the truth out so that justice can prevail? No matter what people think the cost might be, do we trust God enough to follow what the Lord is telling us to do so that justice can occur? It's a question we have to all answer at various points in our lives. It's a question that some people are actually even afraid to acknowledge. But as Christians, it's important that we do acknowledge it. It's important that we do say, you know, Lord, what do you want me to do today? God, what do you have for me today? What is your priority? Not my priority, but what is your priority today? And if the Lord tells you to stand up and reveal a truth, even though it might not be safe to do it, you might put your job in jeopardy, you might put your business in jeopardy, you might put your reputation, your career in jeopardy, we got to trust that the Lord knows what he's doing, and that he is sovereign, and that the truth is worth that. The truth is worth that. That's what we talk about in, you know, behind closed doors, in state government, local government, even in the national government. When am I supposed to stand up? When is justice appropriate? And there are a lot of times that people want to look the other way, because it's easier to look the other way than know the truth, because if you know the truth, you got to do something about it. Evil depends on people looking the other way. It depends on people not doing the right thing. It depends on. It exists because people refuse to shine their light. They cover it instead with a bushel basket. You know, we sometimes think that our own government is going to do the right thing. The people in that government are going to do the right thing. Government, remember, is a tool. The governing, the people that are in there, the bureaucrats, the elected officials, I think there's a lot of presumption that they're always going to do the right thing. And sometimes they don't. And we need to be unafraid to call them on it when they don't do the right thing. We just have to be unafraid. There shouldn't be fear in the Christian's life or vocabulary, because fear really is not trusting that God is sovereign. That's ultimately what it is. Now, that's not to say that, you know, in battle you're not afraid, that, you know, there aren't times in your life when you're scared, but it's what you do next that counts. You know, laying it before the Lord at the foot of the cross. And he wants that honesty. I believe he does. I will talk a little bit more today about some of the explosive information that I obtained late last week. And it's some of the unbelievable things that have been alleged inside the Bureau of Land Management. But first, I want to get to your daily intelligence briefing in the international front. because there's been so much happening. But first, on the international front, the Iranian-backed Houthi militias in Yemen, these rebels launched a missile, a ballistic missile, that exploded near the Saudi Arabian Royal Palace. Now, the Saudis say they intercepted it. Regardless, that is an escalation of tensions as people see the Houthis as Iranian proxies. And the fact that it came that close to the Royal Palace, the Saudis have to do something, and they've announced that they're going to strike into Yemen again. Eventually, though, this looks like a confrontation between Saudi Arabia and Iran that is brewing. Now, remember Hezbollah, which is kind of the A-team of terrorists, if you will, is in Lebanon. And there are Hamas-backed terrorists in right on the border. But in league with Saudi Arabia, at least some Saudis in Saudi Arabia, right on Israel's doorstep. Now, I want to be very clear, because the new Saudi regime is very clearly going to a moderate stance. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Middle East aligns with this confrontation brewing. But it's very clear that the lines are being drawn between the Shia-backed Iranians and the Iranian militias and the Iranian special forces and the Iranian intelligence organizations and the Saudi proxies and intelligence organizations. So more to come on this, but getting that close to the Royal Palace, you're seeing a very dramatic escalation of tensions over there in the Middle East. Also on the international front, North Korea. Multiple sources that I have inside places that know, I'll just leave it at that, are very, very concerned that there is going to be a North Korean nuclear test, potentially in the next couple of weeks before the new year. There have been military assets spun up in regards to this. But most interestingly, you have the Marines, both South Korean Marines and U.S. Marines, that have been doing a joint operation since December 4th, training for an attack on the Olympics, which are slated here very soon to be in Seoul, South Korea. I kind of wonder why there hasn't been a lot more about this, at least as far as discussion is concerned, about what exactly is being trained for. Now, I mean, The Sun has the story about half-naked South Korean and U.S. Marines holding snow drills to prepare for Winter Olympics attack. Well, I mean, that's a little bit sensationalist, because instead of answering, it raises actually more questions about, is this maybe in advance of some hostilities there in North Korea to preempt or to respond to a nuclear test, potentially atmospheric nuclear test by the North Koreans? So something we're going to be watching over the Christmas holidays into the new year, because it looks like, again, there is a massive escalation there in North Korea. And we still have three aircraft carrier groups there as of the last information I have. So there are other assets being spun up. Some of these assets indicate or confirm that the Pentagon, the Trump administration, believes that there may be a nuclear test in the offing. So keep your eye on that. And that brings us now to Venezuela. Now, there's been a lot said and not said about Venezuela, but it's interesting to me that the New York Times finally comes out. Now, the New York Times and then the New American Magazine have talked about this, but the New American Magazine talks about the fact that although the New York Times investigation across Venezuela, where they interviewed doctors at 21 hospitals in 17 states across the country, say that their emergency rooms are being overwhelmed by children suffering from malnutrition, and that this is the situation in Venezuela is taking a very dark turn. All the New York Times can say is that this came from economic mismanagement. This misfortune of the children, especially heading toward Christmas time, is just simple economic mismanagement. No admission of the reality that this was socialist policies that failed that are now resulting in starving children in Venezuela that are overwhelming the emergency rooms there. Because of these failed socialist policies. No admission of it. No admission of the fact that this is in an oil-rich country and this should not have happened. But it should give you an idea of the media bias out there, at the very least. Which brings us to the next thing. On the national front, the Trump administration has now officially come out and blamed North Korea for the WannaCry ransomware attack that crippled computers across the globe earlier this year. InfoWars actually has this story. And it says, quote, the hackers believed to be North Korea's Lazarus Group utilized a leaked NSA zero-day exploit to enable the ransomware to rapidly spread and infect countless computers in more than 150 nations, end quote. So this is another example of the North Koreans doing hacking attacks. Remember, we brought up the fact that the power grid had been hacked to the extent the lights could have been turned on and off, okay? Now we have this admission, or at least I should say attribution to North Korea regarding this WannaCry cyber attack. Now, about 3 years ago, I predicted that ultimately the Department of Defense is going to have some sort of a defense mechanism set up in regards to cyber attacks, where they will try to centralize control over states even because of the economic and national security implications of this stuff. I suspect this is where this is going to head still, and this is going to be added into the reasoning for it. Now, interestingly enough, that may not be, and I don't believe is the best solution to centralize control as far as this is concerned. Decentralized fighting of these cyber attacks is actually better. Decentralization of these systems is easier and better because it makes it a harder target. So we'll keep our eyes on this, but just another example that everything that you put online probably isn't totally secure, 100%. Nobody can make that claim. Also on the national front, Puerto Rico. Remember Puerto Rico? Remember the hurricane? So the Center for Investigative Journalism came out with a revised death toll. Now, the official death toll stood at 64, and everybody knew that just wasn't true. Now they have revised that to over 1,000 dead as a result of Hurricane Maria, compared to 2016 data. So they're attributing these deaths to the hurricane because of the fact these are additional deaths compared to what was last year. So this is, again, an estimate by their part, but far higher than 64. And again, people said this could not happen in the United States of America. Well, even more is being reported. This coming from the Miami Herald, that 200,000 Puerto Ricans fled to Florida as a result of Hurricane Maria. And it's still devastated. So this idea that a natural disaster that could be that catastrophic could not happen in the United States is patently false, proven false by what happened down in Puerto Rico, and reinforces, I believe, the reasons we should be prepared here at home. That it can happen. You can have power out for a couple months. You can have massive and widespread water contamination, you can have massive and widespread phone outages. So again, 1,000 dead, 200,000 to Florida, pretty significant. Not hearing a lot about it, but we'll give the credit where credit is due to the Miami Herald and to the Center for Investigative Journalism. All right. Also on the national front, and kind of in an interest, this is fascinating. This kind of stuff's fascinating to me. I've heard about it for years, but the Pentagon has admitted a program started and funded at the behest of Harry Reid to investigate UFOs. Now, I'm going to say up front that I believe the real reason that's given for this was they were investigating whether or not foreign powers had acquired propulsion systems that we were not familiar with. Specifically, this stems from an incident in 2004 and footage that was released from that incident taken by a U.S. fighter jet, actually two U.S. fighter jets that appear to show aerial objects maneuvering in inexplicable ways. And this is coming to us from the New American, but it's citing this Washington Post story. Okay, so very curious that there may be a tie to what I'm about to talk to next in regards to Boeing. So the idea that there were not propulsion systems out that could maneuver in 90-degree angles and stuff is really false, because the molar flying car, that technology has existed since the 1970s. Obviously, stuff like this, you know, for national security reasons, they're going to keep classified. But the fact that other countries could not have that technology really doesn't make sense. I mean, they're developing things, we're developing things that could have happened. The fact that the Pentagon is admitting that it has looked into this, and specifically this incident in regards to the USS Princeton, it's called the USS Princeton Aerial Object Incident, and the fact that there were objects, nobody disputes it. They were acting in ways that they believed were not possible at the time. So very curious stuff out there, but does Russia, does China have technology? Well, obviously they're going to move toward developing it, which is what may have prompted this unusual announcement by Boeing that they are going to, and it was supposed to be today, that they're going to unveil a mystery plane that will change the future of air power forever. And this mystery plane, many are speculating, could be based on the X-37B plane. But they're making, and this is headlined on Drudge, they're making all kinds of assertions that this is technology that nobody has ever seen before. This is technology that's going to change the way we think about aircraft. This is technology that is really going to raise the eyebrows of the world. Interestingly enough, I have not seen anything where they've actually announced this. Drudge has taken it down from the website, at least looking at it right now. So who knows? But interesting that both of these things happened at the same time. This announcement, you know, first that the Pentagon is admitting it looked into, aerial objects maneuvering in ways that they didn't believe was technologically possible, and then Boeing announcing this new plane. All right. Also on the national front, ISIS claims it has hacked the U.S. Army and State Department and is sending assassins to employees' homes and has done so in a gruesome new propaganda video. This is coming from the Daily Mail. And I got to tell you something, the Daily Mail has been doing a phenomenal job getting some of this stuff out. You don't see it anywhere else. And reported in the detail the Daily Mail has been reporting. So if you haven't checked out the Daily Mail's website, check it out. They've been doing a really good job on a ton of different issues. This is just one example. Now, is ISIS really going to send people to the homes of, you know, of soldiers and employees? They've claimed to have these things in the past and nothing has occurred. That said, we need to be vigilant, especially with these two very strange incidents. The one where there's this fire in Georgia at the Atlanta airport that just takes out power for hours. And then also the strange incident with the Amtrak derailing. After ISIS had talked about this, and interesting that Antifa claimed credit for, at least one arm of Antifa claimed credit for this derailing. So you're going to see, I think, a lot of this kind of confusion out there of who's claiming what. But the fact of the matter is that signals are being sent of what the targets are, potentially. And we need to be very vigilant with ourselves. Another reason that we need to keep our eyes out. We need to be trained. We need to be vigilant. And there were reports yesterday that there may have been an object in the tracks with Amtrak. And then later they said, well, maybe it was the fact they were going too fast for these tracks. I suspect that some of this is going to be fleshed out. But either way, we need to be vigilant. Either way, we have to. All right, let's move to the next thing on the national front. The tax cut vote. A lot of people have been asking me what's in this tax cut, and I could tell you it actually is going to have to be re-voted on Wednesday. There's a procedural error based on the Senate parliamentarian, so I'm going to go through kind of what that is. And you know, let me back up for a second. You know, the families affected by that Amtrak, and we need to be praying for those folks, and also some of the first responders. A couple of the folks over there, I know that we're involved in this and trying to help folks out. So let's keep them in mind. I mean, what a horrible thing to experience right before Christmas. Gracious. All right, back to the tax cut vote. So this is coming from MSNBC, okay? So nobody can say I'm, you know, using a total right-wing source or something like that. But according to them, you have some estate tax exemptions, which is going to help farmers, particularly that have large estates. In other words, estates meaning the total value of the assets you own. In particular with farmers, it's the land they own. Also, this tax cut would reduce the corporate tax rate to 21% from 35%, allow for a 20% deduction for pass-through businesses. Now, between those two reductions, that is going to have a massive positive impact for families across America, because families usually are the pass-through businesses, or they file as a subchapter S as a corporation for their business. So it's going to dramatically affect a lot of families positively across the country. Also, this eliminates the health care penalty. So this Affordable Care Act penalty for Americans who don't purchase insurance, it gets rid of it. So this is going to, again, be a dramatic effect for a lot of families, especially those who are self-employed. Just in a lot of people that are self-employed as small business owners, they don't make a ton of money, right? We all know that. This is going to help them tremendously. Now, the hang-up procedurally was over something very interesting. It was over some provisions, including one allowing 529 savings accounts to help finance homeschooling. They said that violated procedural rules and will be stripped before the Senate acts on the measure. It's interesting that the thing that would have helped homeschoolers out is the you know, going to be stripped. We'll see if they have a way around it in the House when they re-vote on it. Anyway, that is significant stuff, because homeschoolers right now are basically being – they have to pay double for their child's education. It's taken out in property tax to fund the public school system, and they have to pay for their own homeschool curriculum. That's not fair. And it should be remedied. This is one of the possible remedies to that. So that's the tax cut vote. Again, going to be revoted tomorrow based on this procedural error. Moving to the regional front, many of you heard last Thursday when we broke the national news story on the memorandum, communication specifically from Larry C. Wooten, special agent, to Andrew D. Goldsmith, assistant deputy attorney general, in regards to the Bundy case down there. And a lot of people don't know what happened down there, but essentially the federal government tried to say that Bundy owed a ton of grazing fees down there. Now, what really was the truth is he only owed $8,000 in what are called trespass cattle fees or grazing fees, but he had already written a check that had been cashed by the county, Clark County, for $6,000 of it. Okay, all the rest of it was kind of trumped up administrative fees and stuff. The core of this was that the grazing fees, $6,000 of them, were paid, and $8,000 was actually what they claimed was owed. This come out in court documents. Now, as a result of these so-called back grazing fees, or the grazing fees that the federal government felt that were not paid by Clive and Bundy, but actually had been paid to the county, they decided to do a cattle roundup of all of Clive and Bundy's cows to settle this supposed debt pursuant to a court order. Now, they were just supposed to round them up and then sell them at auction, okay? What ended up happening is they came in there with a literally a militaristic presence. And instead of rounding up some of the cattle, they killed some of the cattle, put them in a mass grave, shot a couple of Clive and Bundy's bulls, which the bulls are what continue the herd. And a lot of questions were raised, tased some older ladies, rubbed their faces in the dirt, and said they needed to be contained to a First Amendment zone because they were protesting this action. And by the way, that happened in a right-of-way. Okay, many people question that whole thing. The Bundys get arrested later, and they're tried. Essentially, the government's trying to portray them as domestic terrorists, even though they were lawfully protesting in right-of-ways. Many people flocked down to the Bundy Ranch to come to their defense. Larry Wooten, who is a special agent and was the lead investigator for the Bundy case, wrote a scathing indictment of the special agent in charge, Dan Love, who was the guy who was in charge on the ground down there while this cattle roundup was being attempted. And in this, Special Agent Wooten admitted that there was an arrest wall that had Clive and Bundy and Eric Parker's picture up. Eric Parker was down there as well, with two big red X's through it. And then, in the most just alarming part of this, alleges, quote, "Time after time I was told of BLM special agent in charge Love's conduct. I was told by BLM law enforcement supervisors that he had a kill book as a trophy and in essence bragged about getting three individuals in Utah to commit suicide, one of whom was Dr. Red, by the way." This is in parentheses. And these are separate incidents, end quote. Okay, so there's also allegations of sexual misconduct in here that special agent in charge Love had sent pictures of his girlfriend's genitalia and also his own excrement, horrible stuff, to some fellow employees that there was intentionally a pattern to withhold exculpatory evidence or evidence that tends to prove the defense's case in this case, the Bundys. And also the confirmation that snipers were indeed down there. Now, snipers and some of the other things that Special Agent Wooten say in this correspondence raise a lot of questions as to, you know, it looks like the government intentionally, at least the BLM law enforcement arm, intentionally tried to make this a confrontation. And so, at the very least, I think that this warrants a congressional investigation, an investigation by Secretary Zinke and the Trump administration. But also, this withholding of exculpatory evidence, Special Agent Wooten claims that the lead attorney, Stephen Myrie, knew about this stuff and just kind of took a don't ask, don't tell to it. So that raises the question of, does there need to be an investigation of some of the prosecutors involved in here? And again, at the very least, It looks like this case may be dismissed tomorrow, Wednesday, because the judge apparently has a hold of these materials. Well, also on Saturday, I broke a national story as well on another memorandum that was notes from Wooten's calendar in preparation for a conference call with prosecutors on October 14th, 2016. Now, the heading on this page read, quote, potential issues slash critical vulnerabilities, end quote. That was to the case. So Special Agent Wooten in this memorandum, which comes from Special Agent in Charge Kent Kleeman, these were four things that Wooten alleges were critical vulnerabilities in the BLM's case. And I want to read these verbatim. Quote, BLM was heavy-handed, even cruel in the enforcement of the court order. BLM lacked law enforcement authority in their case. BLM is a poor manager of the resources, such as grazing. Dan Love had a personal agenda and is immoral, and then in parentheses, jury appeal, and parentheses, end quote. So you got a lot of stuff here. Now, Washington State, a lot of people don't know, has 435,000 acres of BLM-managed land here. But again, at the very least, looks like there should be a dismissal in this case and an investigation. On top of that, this looks like enough of a reason to bring this before President Trump to ask for a commutation of the sentences of those that have already made plea agreements, because ostensibly they made plea agreements without knowing all the facts. So we're going to keep our eyes on this and break information as it comes out. But remember, tomorrow, the judge is coming back and they're going to bring this trial up again, and we'll see if there is a dismissal tomorrow. If there's not, very likely there's going to be more information coming out on this stuff. Just kind of a stunning indictment, the Bureau of Land Management. But it also gives us a lens behind the scenes that when there isn't openness and transparency and accountability, that people can run amok inside these government agencies. On the local front, lastly, county commissioners voted to increase property taxes and also voted on a budget that leaves a $4.5 million hole coming up for the next budget cycle. Commissioner Josh Kearns voting no on the property tax increases and no on the budget for those reasons. And kudos goes out to him. But it just goes to show that we have to be keeping our eyes on all levels of government so that we can make sure we remain free. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us, praying for me and the show and Victoria. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And you can always send me an email at matt@voce.com. And remember, too, that if you get a chance, go to Readout News. They help break these national stories. And Sherry Duvalli did a great job last Thursday. I think we just forget that sometimes, there are good reporters out there. And Sherry Duvalli is one of them. So with that, it's my honor to introduce my guest for today on Patriot Radio, Ken Bitgood of the Digital Bible Society. And Ken, really appreciate you coming on today, and hope you're gearing up here for Christmas holiday.
Well, Matt, it's an honor to speak with you, and it really is. It's good to hear you and to talk with you. Appreciate your leadership, not only in Washington, but for our country, for your service. It's great to be with you.
Well, I really appreciate that, Ken. Well, thank you, too, for everything you're doing. I really, if you could, just kind of set the ground for the listeners. What is the Digital Bible Society? How did it come about? And if you could take a little bit of time, let the listeners know a little bit about how this is impacting spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Well, thank you, Matt. So we started in 2001. We're a Texas-based 501c3 ministry that really kind of felt kind of responding to a cry that was coming out of China. And that cry was the need for resources, Bibles, books, anything that could be used to help plant churches, to strengthen disciples, to make disciples, even to, you know, to bring the gospel to that country. We started in response to a missionary who had come out of China, had been there for 20 years, planting churches with in a highly persecuted environment. And he was actually, he came to Houston, where we're based, and was wanting to gather anything that he could. He stayed in a friend's missionary home here in Texas, and wanted to start scanning books off the pastor's bookshelf. He started to scan Matthew Henry's commentary because of our relationship with Pastor Hong Sit and Amy. They go way back in the Chinese house church. He asked us to help, and when I heard what he was trying to do, I said, well, why would he do that? Why would he scan English books to take back to China? And I said, I need to show him Bible software. So I sat down with him and started showing him, at that time, commercial Bible software with, you know, PC Study Bible and others. And this gentleman, his name's John, he just begins weeping uncontrollably at the amount of resources that were so abundant here in the West, whereas, you know, church planting for 20 years, they didn't even have Bibles to give people. And so he immediately wants to take the software and make illegal copies and go back to China and begin to hand it out, and put us in kind of a quandary, a moral dilemma. What do we do? Do we just encourage, the what we would consider illegal, what the Chinese would put you in jail for, copying of resources and taking them back and handing them out? I said, Why would you hand out resources in English? Wouldn't it be better if there was resources, Bibles and so forth, in Chinese? He said, well, yes, it would be, but right now we have nothing, and anything is better than nothing. Let me just copy your software. And so we responded to this dilemma by saying, well, that's not legal. Is it legal? And so we just responded by praying. Let's just pray that God will use us. I'm a programmer. I know programmers. We will pray that God will give us resources in Chinese. We'll use our programming skills to put them together. And at that time, the method of distribution, the primary one, was CDs. We'll put it together in a CD. You can go back to China and hand it out to your heart's content. So we prayed this prayer not knowing what we were getting into, but out of it, God birthed a ministry that rapidly grew, that we call Digital Bible Society. And we spent the first 10 years working with multiple ministries, over 100 ministries, who actually wanted their resources distributed in China because they had virtually no market there. And so we gathered together. We homeschooled our sons. Our three sons became involved. We continued to grow. And for about ten years, we worked on increasing this library that we called Chinese Treasures, that's to this day being distributed across China now by the hundreds of thousands annually. And it's a free-to-copy, free-to-share resource that contains now thousands of resources, thousands of songs and hymns, and about 8 different Chinese Bibles that people can use and share. It has movies like the Jesus Film, the audio Bible from Faith Comes by Hearing, and great books from many ministries that people can now take and freely share, and without conscience, without harming their conscience. They can make copies. Some make 10 copies. We know of people who make hundreds of thousands of them. It's really made a major impact in China over the years, and has done a lot to ensure that what was then the fastest growing church in the world is now adequately equipped, or at least on the way to being adequately equipped with resources for church planting.
So this includes everything. I mean, you get commentaries, just different translations of scripture, expository type materials as well.
That's correct. That's for our Chinese library, and And in 2010, we were meeting with some very major ministries, Open Doors, Brother Andrew's Ministry, Voice of the Martyrs, Bible Leagues, and we presented what we had done in China, and they basically, and we were dreaming of someday doing the same thing for the Arabic world. And so at that point, we began to get some significant and helpful support from major ministries to go from being all volunteer to where we're actually able to pay programmers full time to start working on additional libraries. And we've been working ever since. We now have about 22 of these that are going into places like, well, places that you are quite familiar with, places like Iraq and Iran and Bosnia, places like India and Bangladesh and other places like Myanmar, where the gospel of Christ is radically persecuted. It is now possible for people to carry with them resources, not so much now on CDs, but on micro SD chips or thumb drives or hard drives. It's now possible for every missionary to secure resources and to go into these places and freely give them and copy them.
Well, let's talk about one of the practical things. You know, I my wife is from Ukraine. Bibles were smuggled into Ukraine. She was there, you know, under the former Soviet Union. Very difficult to smuggle a gigantic, you know, Bible, or even the kind of smaller miniaturized Bibles. Very difficult to smuggle those in, get them into country. But when you have an SD card that is as big as the tip of your finger, I mean, that just makes the distribution so much easier and actually so much safer in countries that are averse to spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ.
It's true. And there is a major shift now from the paper Bibles to distributing digital Bibles, primarily because cell phones, tablets have multiplied across the world. There's now more smartphones on planet Earth than there are people. And you go to some of the poorest places of the world, and you know, the Southeast Asia or Africa, and people there, they have a device that they can use to access the Scripture. So it's pretty exciting times that we're living in. It's a pretty amazing what God has done over the last 10, 15 years since we've been doing this. And you know, we're pretty pumped about what's happening right now.
Well, let's talk about a little bit about the current situations in China and also in Iran. I know Iran, you know, there's a lot of Christians there now. People would not realize that. So when people say, you know, nuke Iran, you got to keep in mind that there are a lot of Christians there now. What is the situation on the ground? Let's start with China. What is the situation on the ground there? Is it going toward more openness toward Christianity, or is it reverting back toward Mao?
Well, it's a great question, and there's a lot of different ways to answer that. Our experience now is that China, you know, with 1.2 billion people, you know, 3 to 4 times the size of the United States and Canada put together, it's pretty diverse. And there are places where the persecution is continuing, and sometimes even worse, and there's other places where there's remarkable freedom. China is now a place where it is easy, relatively easy, to get Bibles. It's now a place where you'll even find them oftentimes in hotel rooms, and it's there's been a major change and a shift with that regard. There is still some tight controls on the church growth. The growth has become astronomical. A full 10% of Chinese are now professing Christians. Some say 120 million, some say 140 million, and the church continues to grow. We were there recently, just a few months past, and the hunger of the people is unlike anything I've seen in my lifetime, that people are deeply hungry for God. And there is the revival that began, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago continues to grow strong, and there are many, many people who are believers now. Some would say that the church is not as strong as it should be. There's a significant need for training, especially leadership training, but the church is growing quite strong and continues. Iran on the other hand, up till recently, is now the place where the fastest growing church in the world is actually inside Iran. And as you mentioned, people just don't know this. You don't hear this on, you know, standard media outlets. But there are some estimate between 5, some estimate between 10 or more million Christians who are meeting in secret in house churches, because it's, I mean, they'll go to jail for, you know, for meeting and worshiping God, certainly for sharing the gospel. You know, their lives are at risk because of the tight clamps of the regime in Iran. But it is one place that is absolutely exploding with the gospel. And what has happened is that the people of Iran are turning from Islam. They're tired of where it has taken them. And I'm sure, Matt, you're quite aware of this, that this trend that's not just happening in Iran, but across the Arabic world, where, you know, people are quietly turning from Iran and they are searching for Christ, and Christ is meeting them in remarkable and historic ways.
Yeah, you hear these stories about dreams and visions. Just amazing, some of the miracles that are happening over there, and how Christ is meeting them where they are, not, you know, not where they may be, but where they are. That's just that. What a great testimony that is.
It is. It is an exciting place to be. We were just recently in Cairo, and it, the hunger of the church there, the explosive nature of Christianity. It is really phenomenal. It's my wife and I's favorite place to be right now, because so many people are coming to Christ, and there's a great awakening that's happening there. People are hungry for God, and, you know, having, you know, lived in the States for a long time, it's, you know, been a Christian myself for 40 years, it's very, very refreshing to see. It was almost like I came to Christ in the 70s, you know, there was like a move of God, a hunger for God that is not as prevalent now as we would like. I know that you're praying for that as well, too, but we'd love to see the same hunger that's there in the Middle East, you know, here. And I know your listeners have probably heard that, but these are, they when they think of the Arabic world, they need to recognize that it is ripe for the harvest. The fields are white. And it's an exciting time. And they need resources. They're desperate. If you give them Bibles, if you give them gospel films on micro SD, they will eat it up. They will listen to it because they're hungry and they're searching. The Syrian refugee crisis is something that we'll continue to hear about, but it presents for us one of the greatest opportunities of our lifetime to reach out with the gospel.
It really does. There's just no question about it. And the great part about this technology is the cost. I mean, it used to have to be limited by the amount of Bibles you could print, not because you didn't want to print Bibles or you didn't have printers to do it, but it was the cost. With this, with SD cards, you know, just a gigabyte SD card being, you know, maybe $1, $2 when you buy them in bulk, you can spread the gospel of Jesus Christ so cost-effectively to so many more places than you would in the past.
It's true, and great organizations, like just talking today with Wycliffe and some of the Bible societies. We have a great partnership with Faith Comes by Hearing and the Jesus Film. And they're creating resources by the thousands. There's now 1,500 languages that the Jesus Film is available in, and that great organization is doing everything they can to ensure that they remain free and are available for download, so that when you or your listeners are traveling or they meet someone, it's they need to know that they can access now scriptures, you know, scripture films in 1,500 languages, that they can access scriptures from our website in over 850 languages and download them for free. They can get audio Bibles in 1,100 languages from groups like Faith Comes by Hearing. And there is something that is underway now that we will see in our lifetime, that the gospel of the kingdom preached, some versions say published, in all the world as a testimony to all nations. Jesus says this right out of Matthew 24 in his All of It discourse. When he's talking about the end of days, he gives us this sign that the gospel of the kingdom will be preached. It will be available in all the world, in all the languages of the world, as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. And
it's
there
so
is
exciting.
A multiplication that is happening right now of biblical content into the languages of the world that is really, really exciting.
I'm really, this is so encouraging, and especially right before the Christmas holiday, just so encouraging. If people want to be, to help you out, maybe even get involved or donate or just, you know, help in volunteer ways, where can they go and how can they connect with you?
Well, they can go to our website. It's at DBS, like Digital Bible Society, dbs.org. They can find us on Google. They can go there and begin to partner as a distributor. They can gather resources at no cost. They can begin the process of sharing those with their neighbors or on missions trips or abroad. We're so grateful for financial partners who will stand with us. And just to see the processing of the Bibles of the world as much as possible, making them not just free to people, but accessible, and helping us tell the world that there is a Bible in your language and it is available. It can be one click away. It's something that you can use on a device. It's something that you, if need be, you can get printed. We're now put Bibles in print in over 500 languages, and we put them for the cost of publishing right on Amazon.com. We've been doing this for the last 4 or 5 months now, so that people around the world on Amazon can buy Bibles that have never been published. There has not been a way to financially make Scripture available in so many languages because of the cost of printing. And in some of these languages, there's only 10 or 15,000 people, but now because a Bible translator gave their lives to ensure that the Bible would be accurately translated in their language, and because they're willing to share it with us, we put it on Amazon for the cost of printing. So their Bibles can be printed, they can be downloaded, they can be shared, and we believe that God is preparing us using these times. When I say us, I'm talking about multiple ministries in the Bible distribution world, that he's getting the world ready for the greatest distribution of biblical content in history. And it seems like that is going to be happening over the next 5 to 10 years as many organizations are working together to ensure that the gospel of the kingdom is published in every language. So we would love for your partners to contact us and to become involved. We're going to be hiring some more programmers as we can afford that. And, we have a really bright and exciting future in terms of world missions because of the availability now of God's Word.
So one of the great parts of your website is the InScript technology that's on there, being able to compare Bibles side by side. You can pick your country, and in the United States, you have even some of the Native American languages. It's just phenomenal. If you could briefly tell the listeners about where they can go to access that as well.
Well, one of the products that we make is, as you mentioned, is InScript. It's at InScript.org, or they can get to it directly from DBS.org, our website. And it does put side-by-side over 1,000 Bible versions so that people can use them for reading, for learning a new language, for sharing the gospel story with someone who might not speak their language. That particular product is built into our library so that it's available in an offline sense. Yeah, one of the challenges that we have in ensuring that the world has the Word of God is remembering that 70% of the world cannot afford internet access. you know, 70%+ of the world are living on what we would, you know, equivalent of less than $10 a day. And so they can't stream off the internet necessarily. Couldn't even download an audio Bible. But if you were to give them these resources on a thumb drive or, as you mentioned, a micro SD, it suddenly becomes a reality to them that they could have the same benefit that that you and I and your listeners have of just such easy access to the scriptures. We continue to discover is that people in minority languages, they know that there's a Bible that exists in their language, but they have no idea how to get it. And this is really the state of affairs in almost the entire world. They just can't get access to their scriptures. They have no knowledge of it. They know that there was a Bible translated 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, but there's no copies left for them to even discover.
But they can.
That is changing. That's changing now.
But they can't access it with what you're doing. And we're out of time, and I thank you so much. May God bless your ministry. And Ken, I'd love to have you back on again, you know, so you can give us an update of some of the new projects that you're working on. But please keep up the great work and for the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And blessings to you. Merry Christmas. And tell everybody there Merry Christmas as well from all of us up here in Eastern Washington.
Matt, thank you so much for your work and your leadership. Thank you for the example for standing on the front lines in so many different ways. It's a blessing. The honor is ours. We'll stay in touch.
Amen. Well, God bless you. Ken Bitgood, Digital Bible Society, dbs.org. You can also go to inscript.org. That's script with a T on the end of it, inscript.org. Great products, a great way to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ for your church, your ministry, especially during this holiday season. May God bless all of you, and may He make this generation the greatest one.